Dawn Keem was born a healthy baby girl with fully functioning senses, and she lived that way for 28 years until one day, kind of suddenly and kind of at random, a disease crept in and claimed her sense of hearing. Now, Dawn would go on. She would live a normal, healthy life. She would talk with people. She would converse with people, but to communicate, she would have to read lips, which she admits was, frankly, kind of exhausting. In that time, Dawn would have a healthy baby boy, and she would raise him, talk with him, converse with him, but again, she would just have to read lips, which meant that she never got to hear his voice, not his first cry, not his first giggle, not his first words, nothing for 15 years except silence. In those 15 years, technology would develop and advance, and Dawn would have the opportunity to regain her sense of hearing. She elected to have a cochlear implant. And as the technicians were tuning it in and dialing it in, Dawn's family whipped out their phones and started filming because her son had entered the room. And on that day, for the first time in 15 years, she not only heard her son's voice, but she heard the words, "I love you, Mom." And I'm not going to show that video this morning, because frankly, I don't think we have enough tissues in the building to handle the influx of emotion. Needless to say, she was crying, he was crying. I was watching this video on YouTube eating Cheetos, and I was crying. Like, those are some powerful words. Those words, "I love you." Man, they have the power to bring us to our knees or to make us soar. My hope is that you hear those powerful words often. But that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. Because when was the last time you heard those words and you really felt their full brunt and force? Like, you heard them and you felt it in your gut. And maybe it made you spring a leak a little bit. It made you get a little emotional because you felt all of the emotion, all the affection, all of the love in those words. Now, maybe that was this morning that happened for you. Or maybe it's been a while. But I think regardless of the case, you understand what I'm about to say. It's not unusual to hear important words again and again and again, and yet not really hear them for all they're worth or all that they are. Case in point, I have never really been great in the kitchen. I didn't spend a whole lot of time there growing up, so there were a lot of kitchen rules I was unfamiliar with. My wife was fully aware of this when she married me. So there we were, back from our honeymoon. We had received a bunch of kitchen things as gifts, and we're sorting through it. She knew how inept I was, and so as she's putting stuff away, she's kind of explaining stuff to me, like, this is what this pan is for, and this is what this gizmo does. And then she holds up these cake pans. She says, "These are nice cake pans. Do not use metal on these pans. You'll scratch them and ruin them." You got it, boss. The very next day, I remember this so clearly. It was a Saturday around 9 a.m. She decides she wants to bake a cake, so she mixes up her cake. She pours it in her nice new cake pans, puts it in the oven, and then she's going to get in the shower. She says, "When the timer goes off, can you get that cake out of the oven?" "Yeah, I got this." "Are you sure?" "Yes, I can get the cake." "Remember, don't use metal on the pans." "You got it, boss." So she goes and gets ready. Timer goes off. I get that cake out of the oven. And I'm looking at it thinking she has no confidence in me. She doesn't think I can do this. But she's going to learn today. Because not only am I going to get this cake out of the oven, but I'm going to frost it, get a piece on a plate, big glass of milk waiting for her whenever she gets out of that shower. She's going to love me, and she will never question my ability ever again. You can tell I was a newlywed, right? So I wait for the cake to cool. I frost it, and it comes time to cut the cake. And you know what I did. I grabbed the biggest, gnarliest metal knife I could find. I'm going left, I'm going right, up, down. I think I'm Iron Chef up in here. And little did I know, I'm just wrecking this cake pan. It's scratched to heck. It's beyond repair. She comes out. She sees me holding this big, frosting-covered knife with this face like, "What are you doing?" And that's when I remembered the words. Didn't she say something about metal on this cake pan? It's not unusual to hear important words again and again and again, and yet not really hear them for all that they're worth. This morning, I want to share with you three powerful words. And you've probably heard them before, My hope is that you hear them again and again. But my greatest wish this morning is that you hear them for all that they're worth. These words have more promise and more hope for your life and, frankly, for this whole world than any other words spoken before. I want you to know the power of these words. Jesus is alive. Those words mean everything. And this morning, if you don't yet know why, you will by the time we're done, because if you don't, we haven't done our job. If you got your Bibles with you this morning, I want to encourage you, open it up to the book of Mark, chapter 16. Mark chapter 16 is where we're going to be. If you don't have your Bible with you, don't sweat it. We're going to have the words up on the screen behind so you can follow along. But I would encourage you to consider taking a step this morning. Download the YouVersion Bible app on your mobile device. It's the YOU version. It's free. It's not going to put a bunch of ads in your mailbox or anything. We use it here all the time. So Mark chapter 16 is where we're going to be. And in this story, we're going to be reminded of how easy it is to hear these three powerful words and yet not really hear them for all they're worth. Mark 16, verse 1. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, bought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. So we've got this small group of ladies who has seen the crucifixion of Jesus. If we were to back up a little bit in chapter 15, verse 47, we'd find that they were there to see his body laid to rest. So they have seen all of the events unfold during this whirlwind weekend, and this really is their first opportunity just to pay their respects to Christ. And to do this, they go and they buy some aromatic spices, just some smell-good stuff. And this would be kind of like putting flowers next to a headstone, something that we do today, because it was a way just to honor Jesus. What they were going to do is they were going to go anoint his body or sprinkle these aromatic spices all over it to keep the smell of decomposition down, which sounds kind of gross, I know, but it really is kind of a touching picture because their goal was to uphold the dignity of Jesus' body even after he was gone. It really is kind of a touching thing. But when they get to this tomb, what they find is that the big boulder that was there in front of it to seal it shut has been moved out of the way, which is not common or typical. So seeing this unusual picture, they do what any normal person would do in that situation. They get nosy, and they start poking around. And that brings us to verse 5. It says, as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in white robes sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He's risen. He's not here. You see the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." So these ladies get in the tomb, and what they find is this angelic man who has this message for them, this message of three powerful words. "Ladies, you're looking for Jesus, but he ain't here. Jesus is alive." Now, we need to understand something about these ladies. Okay, they're not just recent followers of Jesus. They've been with him for a while. Again, if we were to back up in chapter 15, we'd find that they traveled with him throughout the region of Galilee, which means that they probably were part of his support team, probably financially, probably helped take care of his needs. They almost certainly sat around with the disciples and heard his teachings, which means they've heard on numerous occasions Jesus predict this very event. He wasn't shy about telling his disciples, "I'm going to be killed, but I'm going to be raised back to life." He said it back in Mark 8. He said it again in chapter 9. And now here in chapter 16, they're looking at this empty tomb, and this angelic man is telling them the words, "Jesus is alive." This is a pretty profound moment. So how do you think these ladies responded in this situation? You know, it probably would have been reasonable if they had just dropped to their knees and worshiped God. That probably would have made sense. Or maybe they would have thrown their hands in the air in disbelief because what they're looking at is evidence that the words of Jesus are coming true right in front of their very eyes. That probably would have been an acceptable response as well. Or maybe they would have just run out and told as many people all over the countryside as they could find, because this empty tomb is some pretty compelling evidence. Any of those things would have been great. Any of them would have been acceptable. But none of them are what happened. Instead, we find this in verse 8. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. So seeing this empty tomb and hearing the most important words ever spoken, these ladies tremble, run away, and say nothing. In fact, if we were to keep reading, we find out the only reason the news of the resurrection got out was because Jesus appeared to people himself and told them. So what gives here, right? I mean, what we have here are some ladies that seem to have listened to these words, but maybe not heard them for all they were worth. And frankly, that same thing happens again and again and again in our lives. It's why I love sharing this story on Easter, because it's easy to see ourselves in these characters. We oftentimes hear those three powerful words, but we don't really hear them for all that they're worth. Example, I went to a small Christian college where we had chapel twice a week, once on Tuesday, once on Thursday. There's a man named Matt Stafford that oversaw that chapel service. It's his job to organize things. And I remember my very, very first chapel. It was a Tuesday. I went, I sat down in my seat, lights came down, Matt got on stage, he welcomed everybody, and then he said, "Hey, I got some good news for you this morning." And at this point, I didn't know what he was going to say. I thought, maybe he's going to say class is canceled this afternoon. That would be some good news. Or better yet, what if he was going to say, "We overcharged you and you all have refund checks in your mailbox. Woo!" That would be some really good news. But that's not what he said. He said, "Hey, I got some good news for you this morning. Jesus is alive." And I listened to the words, but my thought was, "Oh, yeah, you know, I guess that is some good news. Thanks, Matt." And we went on with chapel. Thursday came. I went to chapel. I sat in my seat. Lights came down. Matt got on stage. He said, "I got some good news for you this morning. Jesus is alive." And I thought, "Oh, this is his thing. This is what he does every week. Okay." 2 days a week, every week for 4 years, I listened to the words, but seldom did I really hear them, because I got real problems to deal with right now. And it's great that Jesus is alive, Matt, but I got financial obligations, people to pay. I got deadlines, people to answer to. I got personal stuff that I'm working through in my life right now. And I agree, it's great that Jesus is alive, but that just doesn't seem to have a whole lot to do with what I'm dealing with right now. Does that sound familiar? I'm willing to bet that we have been in that situation before, where we have allowed the fears and the concerns and the demands of life to drown out the power of those words. Because we got real problems today. And real problems, immediate problems, tend to demand our immediate attention. I mean, just this week, I talked with somebody in the hospital because they were sick. I talk with somebody who's going through cancer treatments right now. I talk to somebody who's wrestling with career stuff right now. I talk to somebody who's wrestling just to keep their marriage together. I talk to somebody who's wrestling to pay their bills and keep food on the table. We got real problems that we deal with right now. So yeah, it's great that Jesus is alive, but that doesn't seem to help a whole lot. Not on the surface, anyway. But this is what I need you to understand this morning. These words matter so much because of the junk in our life. Let me say that again. These words matter so much because of all the junk that we deal with. It's because of the present struggles. It's because of the present hardships that we need, and I mean capital N-E-E-D, need the power of these words. If you got your Bibles open still, flip over to 1 Peter chapter 1. Right at the beginning of the book, 1 Peter chapter 1, there's this paragraph I want to share with you this morning. It does a great job of outlining why we need these words, why we need this promise and this hope, because of the junk we deal with. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, it goes like this. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade, kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. There's a lot in that little paragraph. We're going to unpack it this morning, and we're actually going to start at the end. The Bible doesn't mix words. Sometimes we deal with junk in life. It says that we have to deal with grief in all kinds of trials. Put very plainly, sometimes life sucks. Sometimes we have to deal with junk. Sometimes we have to deal with cancer and illness. And sometimes we have to deal with unemployment. Sometimes we have to deal with funerals. Sometimes we have to deal with breakups, with divorce, with pain. Sometimes we have to deal with failure. Sometimes we have to deal with loneliness. We have to deal with junk in this life. This world tends to take away everything that it gives because this life perishes, spoils, and fades. And nobody is exempt. Not long ago, my wife and I went to go visit her grandparents, and they're long in years. We got some health issues, and we were sitting around their kitchen table, and her grandpa was trying to put a key on a key ring. Simple task, but he struggled, and he struggled almost to the point of embarrassment. And keep in mind, this is a guy who just a few years prior was helping his neighbors rake their yard and trim their grass and clean their gutters. Like, he was the guy that helped other people do things they couldn't. And here he was, unable to do something so simple. And he was just a defeated man. And my wife took a little pity. She said, "Papa, can I help you with that?" And with this little tremble in his voice, he handed it over. He said, "I can't do anything anymore." Maybe you have watched a family member or friend, maybe even yourself. Maybe you've seen how it takes our independence, and how it takes the things that we love. You know full well this life perishes, spoils, and fades. You know that there's junk. And that's why this promise matters so much. We're not just reminded that there's junk. We're also reminded in this passage, we have a reason to rejoice. And that doesn't mean we put on a happy face or we fake our way through this. It means we have a genuine reason to celebrate. We have a genuine reason to have joy, even amidst all the junk of life, because we have a hope. And not just any hope, we have a living hope. That doesn't mean it's the kind of hope like, "Oh, I hope this works out," or, "Oh, I hope that this goes my way. It'd be really nice if things worked out." That's not a living hope. That's wishful thinking. And there's a world of difference between living hope and wishful thinking. Wishful thinking is the stuff of lottery tickets, frankly. I've played the lottery before. I don't play very often because I always, and I will emphasize, always lose. I was out with some friends one time. We were getting gas, and we were at a gas station. They had one of those vending machines that sells the scratchers tickets. My friend Nathan took a dollar bill, put it in the machine, got a ticket, and he won $3. Woo, fun. His girlfriend put in a dollar. She got the ticket out, scratched it. She won a free ticket. Woo, more fun. Nathan put two more dollar bills in. First one was a dud, but the second one, he won a free ticket. More fun. My wife put $2 in. She ended up breaking even. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's winning. And I'm watching all of this thinking, tonight's the night. Tonight's the night. I break the curse. I am finally going to win something. I put in five $1 bills. I got five scratchers tickets back. I won a whole lot of nothing. You don't play the lottery expecting to win. You play the lottery with wishful thinking. I hope I win. Man, it sure would be nice if I won. But at the end of the day, you're just rolling the dice. It's wishful thinking. But God is not asking us to roll the dice or to flush our life away on wishful thinking. That's not the kind of hope that 1 Peter talks about. This is a living hope. It's not a dead hope. It's not a floundering hope. It's not a thin or unlikely kind of hope. It is a strong, vibrant, fresh hope. It is hope founded upon the power of three little words. Despite all the junk that we deal with in life, this hope belongs to us because of three little words. It's called a living hope because after 3 days of stillness, a chest began to beat once again. It's called a living hope because 3 days of silence were shattered by as air entered lungs once again. It's called a living hope because 3 days of death were interrupted when Jesus got up and was raised back to life. This is our living hope, and it's afforded to us. This is our promise. This is everything we build our faith on, that if God did it once, he can absolutely do it again, and this time with you. That's our hope. If this is the future, what God can do and will do, we have every reason to push through and deal with the momentary troubles and struggles of the present junk. In this resurrection, God has made us a promise. 1 Peter calls it an inheritance. It's a gift. It's a gift of life, a life that does not perish, spoil, or fade. It's a life that has defeated the junk, a life in which death is defeated, cancer is defeated, loneliness is defeated, poverty defeated, sorrow defeated, darkness defeated. It is a life that is fresh and vibrant and enduring into eternity. That's the fresh hope that we have, this living hope, and it has been validated and authenticated by three little words. Three little words can change everything, guys. I sat in chapel 2 days a week, every week for 4 years. And every time I heard a man named Matt get on stage and tell me some good news that Jesus was alive. And I listened and I listened, but I never really heard those words until I needed it. Until I had to deal with the junk and I needed some hope. Whenever I was passed over for that job that frankly I needed because we had bills to pay. I needed some good news that Jesus was alive, because if he's alive, things are going to be okay. Whenever a girl in my youth group, just this special, beautiful girl, I found out she was lonely and depressed, and she's taking a razor to her arms, to her wrist. I needed good news that Jesus was alive, because if he's alive, there is a power bigger than the pain this kid is dealing with. And when death took from me and stole from me, and it could not be more apparent that life perishes, spoils, or fades. I needed hope. I needed some good news that Jesus was alive, because if he is alive, there's no enemy that hasn't been conquered. There's no pain that will not be healed. If he is alive, we can face tomorrow, no matter what it may hold. If he is alive, all this fear of what if is gone and abolished. If he is alive, we know what the future holds. We know this fresh life that awaits us and is in store. If he is alive, we have a living hope. And church, I have got some good, good news for you this morning. It is good news of fresh life and living hope founded on the power of three little words. Get on your feet. And if you believe them, shout them out. Jesus is alive!